presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about the Yule Ball. Welcome, everybody, to episode 37 of First Years. I am so excited today because I have my wonderful friend, Jessica Glick, on with me, who is also the number one person you want on your team for Harry Potter trivia.
That's awesome. Yeah. I don't know if I can, even talk about the name of our team, but, go us and our awesome team. It's awesome name. So I'm here. I don't know.
You are here, and I'm very excited that you're here. So we're going over the chapters right before and through the Yule Ball. But there's just a couple of things we have to touch on before we get there. So there's a big party after the first task, and Harry opens the egg. And it makes this really, really terrible sound. And Neville thinks that he's going to have to face the Cruciatus curse. And Seamus thinks that he's going to have to fight off a banshee. Do you think any of those predictions are correct? Or what do you think Harry's facing for the next task with this terrible sound?
I'm not too sure at this point. I loved Seamus's guess about the banshee because it's a great callback to his biggest fear, which was his dementor. You know, I think he might be on the right path, but I think there's I don't know what it has to do with an egg per se. Why would that sound be coming out of an egg?
That's true.
It's weird. I think Harry needs to sit down and think about it. But of course, he's an avoidance type, so he's gonna avoid it.
I know the lines where he's like, "Nah, I have 2.5 months; it's fine." Oh, I'm like, Harry,
so much.
I've definitely been there, done that, and then been like, "Oh shit!"
It creeps up on you.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, and then of course you have Neville mentioning the Cruciatus curse as a possibility, which, is raising some flags because we know that he was just very disturbed by Moody's demonstration a few chapters back. And we don't have an explanation of that. But there seems to be something in Neville's past that we don't know about, because that sounds like trauma response.
And then also the line after that where they're like, no, they're not gonna use the Cruciatus curse on the champions. And I was just like, they just had to fight off a dragon. I think anything goes in this tournament.
Absolutely. And a dragon, which they specified had to be you didn't know about it. I mean, I feel like fighting off a dragon with preparation, is kind of a task in and of itself. I, a muggle sitting here, would think, wow, that would be difficult, even if I were trained to do this thing.
Yeah, and they're like, just go in blind. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. But then, okay. So also we have to talk about house elves again, because we got more perspective into house elves. Hermione in this book is on a mission to free all of the house elves. And we see that a lot of people don't agree with her, except for Dobby. And we find out that Dobby and Winky are working at Hogwarts, and Dobby is living his best life. And Winky isn't, and Dobby has his own clothes, and Dumbledore agreed to pay him And Dumbledore agreed to pay him like a lot of money and give him weekends off.
He fights him and just negotiates down. Ugh, love it. Dobby.
I know. I was like, I was really impressed with like Dumbledore offering to be like, yeah, you can have, you know, 10 galleons a week and weekends off. And Dobby's like, no, I'll do one galleon and like one day off a month. But I think it says a lot about Dumbledore that he's absolutely willing to pay that much for that for Dobby, when Dobby says that like no one wanted to hire me because no one wants to pay a house elf. And while he's talking about this, Winky is like, no, I'm properly ashamed of being let go by my master. And all the other house elves while Dobby's talking are like,
they're all really, really uncomfortable with him. Yeah. And like, I wonder, like, I mean, I feel like Dumbledore being part of the wizarding world has like, I guess I'm comparing him to like Hermione, who comes in, learns this thing about these, you know, other beings who have like comparable intelligence to humans, but like, and comparable magical power, but are being subjugated and have been for centuries. And like, you know, so she's appalled and immediately like takes action, and her actions aren't always like, you know, she doesn't really know what she's doing. And like, did she consult any house elves on this? Like, not until literally right now, basically. And you know, so like, she doesn't necessarily know what house elves actually want, other than, you know, like some of them, like Dobby, have had, you know, really terrible experiences. And but on the whole, I think like we have to look at it and say, like, we agree it is an unjust system. So you have to think like Dumbledore, in all his wisdom, has also considered that it's an unjust system. And like, you want to feel like a guy like Dumbledore is going to say something about it. So it kind of makes me wonder if he offered like pay to the house elves upon, you know, becoming headmaster, just like, you know, as an offer, and, you know, and they of course declined, and he was like, all right guys, like, do what you gotta do, like, you know you still want to work here, that's awesome, like, I love it, but I'm just speculation, but
yeah. I mean, it's true, because I have also wondered myself if Hermione is going about this the right way, because obviously like she doesn't have bad intentions about it, but this also is part of, I mean, she's part of the Wizarding world, but it's almost like this like subculture that she really knows nothing about. And I feel like, especially in this chapter with Winky is like in incredible distress over this situation, like is incredibly heartbroken. And Hermione's kind of just like, oh, she'll get over it. Like, yeah, it's fine. Like, she'll get over it once she realizes how much better off she is. And there's not really a lot of empathy for like this whole situation where Winky is like, oh my God, Mr. Crouch can't do anything without me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And she remains loyal to him as well, hinting that there are, you know, I guess probably inadvertently hinting that there are like some real secrets that he has that she would never share, even now that she's not in his employ. So, you know, I don't know. What is straight-laced Mr. Crouch doing? Like,
yeah. And like, this also got me wondering about like, if, you know, because it sort of seems that Winky's right, that Mr. Crouch like isn't really doing very well without her, because now he has to do all of these extra things that he didn't have to do before. And at the Yule Ball, Percy is there on his behalf, and he's like, no, he's gonna have like a really nice quiet Christmas. Yeah. And it made me think, like, is there no like assisted living in the wizarding world at all? Like, you can't, like, if you have a house elf, yes, but like if you don't, like, are there wizards that you can like hire to like help you?
Yeah, like, excellent question. And wizards appear to, in some cases, live to extraordinary age. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, do they just rely on like magic to, can you, like, you know, Hermione repairs Harry's glasses. Can somebody repair their eyes? Like,
right.
You know,
that's maybe true. Not
so simple, but like, you know, or even just sort of like assistive technology that works on magic, not on electricity or something.
That also makes me wonder though, like, does your magic get weaker as you age? Because, like, you know, as Muggles, like, you know, our, you know, we're not as coordinated as we age. We have trouble like handling things. And Dumbledore is old and is a very powerful wizard. So does your magic stay the same? And then maybe you wouldn't really have to need somebody to help out. But at the same time, like, I don't know, then why do wizards need house elves?
Exactly. Yeah. And like, you know, Molly Weasley does seem to have a lot to do around the house. Like, you know, she still has to be there to supervise all the magic that she's casting to, you know, fold the socks and, you know, have the food flip itself into different pans and stir itself. Right. Like, yeah, I mean, I think that is an excellent question. And we may never know, but we may find out something about it.
I know. So the main portion of these chapters, like the big event, is the Yule Ball. And Harry finds out that he has to have a date. And because the champions, they have the first dance, they open the ball. And I love that this chapter is called The Unexpected Task.
Yeah. I also love that and was going to comment almost exactly the same thing. You know, and that he compares it to fighting the dragon and is like, well, now that I did that, this seems way worse. As yes. Like, you know, he's just so uncomfortable. He, like, if you think about it, he grew up in a broom cupboard. So, like, he's obviously, his socialization skills are not going to be that great. Like, let alone,
yeah,
talking to people that he's like attracted to, or, and there's the whole thing where, you know, he likes Cho, and but he's like, you know, she's surrounded by girls, and like, I definitely remember that being a big like factor always, like especially in middle school. That was a big one, but like, you know, you got to get them on their own,
right?
Like,
it's less intimidating word. That way.
Yeah. And then of course she's going with Cedric, and we're heartbroken for Harry.
I know, we really start to see the sort of consequences, isn't the right word, but like, Cho was really just like sort of mentioned in passing in the beginning of this book, and now we're really starting to see that Harry's like, no, I really think this girl is really pretty and she's really cool. And then you see, yeah, sort of like the downfall of like when she's like, no, I'm going with Cedric, and Harry's like, damn it, you know, and he's just like so upset.
She's like so nice about it, and he's like, right, okay, all right then, like, it is a bit disappointing to see how it's very clear, like, I know that these books were being written in like the early 2000s, but like, you know, like compulsory heterosexuality is like very much in play. No one is even considering, you know, any relationship that could be considered queer is not in the text.
So true.
And you know, like the obvious solution to, you know, Harry's problem and Ron's problem, like in an ideal world, is that they just go together, because like, you know, you need a partner, like, so does he. But you know, but that's whatever. I don't know, I just loved the, like, how much this whole section just like put me back, like, in time to middle school. Yes. And high school, and all of the, like, the dances. In middle school we had monthly dances, and then high school they got less frequent somehow. Mm-hmm. And but more like important each time.
Right.
But like, looking back, it's sort of like, you know, why is it like the school's responsibility to like host these like dances to, like, I mean, I loved it, but like just the concept of it, that, you know, you're hosting this dance to like kind of in theory like make people partner up, like give them like incentive to partner right. up, and you know, and yeah, like forming, I mean, particularly like heterosexual pairs to make more wizard babies, like you know, like that, there's something in it that's like, I don't know what the word is, just not insidious, but like, you know, there's like an ulterior motive to it.
Yeah. And going off of like what you said about like how the solution could have just been like Harry and Ron go together because, you know, they both need partners. And I feel like that's sort of like, we put so much pressure on like these dances and like, especially prom, like prom, especially when like, I feel like in reality, like your prom date doesn't have to be like a super high stakes thing. Like really, like with prom, it's like you know, you partner up with somebody so that you could take cute photos and like you have someone to like do the one slow dance that they play all night with, right? Everything else like just like doesn't matter. Like it doesn't, just because you go to prom together doesn't mean you have to like date each other afterward. Like it doesn't mean that you have to like be a couple and get married. Like sometimes it is just like neither of us have dates, like let's just go together, you know?
Yeah, I very much feel that way now, but as a teen I super bought into the idea of like of the hype and, you know, wanting to go, like, well, I had a boyfriend for sort of the latter half of high school, more than that, but like, you know, but he was like long distance, so he was never around for these sort of events, except for like one where he, you know, managed to have some time to visit on the weekend that coincided with the dance, but, you know, but other than that, I was like, I desperately wanted to like have a prom to remember, a winter formal to remember. My junior prom, I like the boyfriend wasn't available, so I went with friends, and like most of them were partnered up, but there was like a couple of people who didn't have partners, and I was like, yeah, like we'll just be the, you know, the single ones and go like on our own. But then it turned out like that, like a couple guys who were meeting, like who were with the, you know, the partners who were like meeting us, like there were a couple of additional guys, but like not one for me. Like
my junior prom was the same way.
Friends like go take photos together, like, so I was like, oh man, so I was the only like single person.
Yeah,
and I'm sorry to make this a long story, but
please, like, go on.
The night culminated in an incredibly embarrassing moment where, like, a super popular guy at school who had a girlfriend who was there at the prom, like, stopped dancing with her and, like, asked me to dance because I was, like, on the side or whatever. And I was, like, I didn't know what to say. So I, like, you know, danced, like, it was, like, a slow dance, like, you know, and I was, like, this feels so much like a pity dance.
Yeah.
And I was so embarrassed, but like I didn't know what to do about it, and I carry that with me as a cringe moment that pops up at all times.
We love cringe moments that our brains never let us forget about ever.
Yeah.
No, my junior prom was the same way. I went to prom 3 times. I went as a sophomore in high school, and then I went to my junior prom and my senior prom, but my junior prom specifically, I remember that like at first, like all of my group of girlfriends and I were just like, oh no, we'll just like all go with each other. It's fine. Like we don't have to get dates. And then like the week leading up to prom, they all got dates. And I was like, guys, what the hell? So thankfully my friend Kirsten at the time also didn't have a date, so she like had the seat next to me, so like was my date.
Yeah,
but like, you know. And then my senior prom, I had a blind date because I just like the guy I wanted to ask ended up going with somebody else. And I was also like very much like Harry, where I was just like, I can't ask anybody, like that's terrifying. And so my senior prom date for my senior prom was like a mutual friend's older brother who went to a different school, who I met like the day of prom, and it was fine.
But yeah, that's great.
You know, I think Ron, like, so Harry really needs a date out of necessity. While like Ron, I feel like, is trying to find a date just like out of pride, because he doesn't want to be the only person that shows up alone. And like, he's very like judgmental about everybody pretty much. And is like,
yeah,
he was like, who would go with Neville? And like, he's like, no, Hermione has to be lying about having a date. No one would ask Hermione to the dance. And it's just so sad because so like, mean. Horrible. And like, it's sad because like, you know, I think Hermione probably would have said yes to Neville if Crumb hadn't asked her.
Yeah.
Just, you know, because she's nice and like, it doesn't matter. And yeah. I think it was really sweet that Ginny was like, yeah, no, I'll go with you. You're like, I'm not going to be able to go anyway.
And then like, you know, kept her like, you know, her word and continued to go with Neville, even though her long-term crush, like, was, you know,
available
and in desperate need of a partner. Like,
it's so true. That hit me like when Ron was like, Ginny, you go with Harry, and like Ginny's like, I can't, and you're like, oh. And I just had a flashback of like the Valentine she sent him in like second year.
God. Her boldness was always there, like, you know, she's just
And I just feel bad for like the girls that end up going with Harry and Ron.
Yeah, like poor Parvati and Padma, like they don't deserve that at all. Like I hope they took the photos in the beginning, because like, how cool would it be to be like, you know, later in life to be like, yeah, look, I went to the Yule Ball with Harry Potter.
Like, yes, we had a like, horrible time, but yeah, guess what? Terrible. He was my date.
It's like the people who like post photos and they're like, oh, I was like Beyonce's prom date or whatever. Like, yeah, no, I was like absolutely supporting them going off with the Beauxbatons guys. Like,
yes, yes, absolutely. Because like Ron like doesn't even ask Padma to dance at all. And I'm really glad that both of them end up with the Beauxbatons boys and like have fun and like live their best life, because like it's fine if you are someone who doesn't like dancing, but don't keep your partner by your side the entire night and have them be miserable. Like when for my senior prom, my date was like, I don't dance. And I was like, okay, that's fine, but you're going to be sitting at the table by yourself while I go dance with my friends. And that's fine. Just like, don't make me sit with you the entire night when I want to go dance. And you're just like, no, I don't want to dance. So like, you have to stay here.
Yeah. Yeah. I always seem to end up with guys who don't like dancing, which sucks, because I always,
you love dancing.
I'm the first one on the dance floor at any point. But yeah, like, oh wait, I do want to take a moment to, call out Fred asking Angelina to the ball. It really makes me feel like they are in a relationship this whole time, because when Ron is like, oh, who are you taking? He's like, Angelina. And like, and he's like, have you asked her? And he was like, oh yeah, I guess I should do that, lol. Like, you know,
yes,
like, seems like a complete formality. Like, they're for show for Ron's, you know.
I like that. Because we like really never hear anything about them, and I really like the theory that they're like secretly together, and then that makes perfect sense why she would just be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like really, really sad about Ron hating on Eloise Midgen for her so-called off-center nose, which seems like the most random thing to hate on.
Ron's terrible in this chapter.
Yeah.
So Hermione shows up at the ball, and she is like, you know, people had thought before she was like a 5 out of 10, and now she's like a 20 out of 10 to everybody. Even Malfoy can't come up with any insult to throw at her because she's like drop dead gorgeous and stunning. And Ron is like so unbelievably mad about this. And why do we think so? Like, is it because she's Hermione and he's like, oh my God, she can get a date and I can't? And Ron was like, well, at least I won't be the only one without a date. Or is it because she went with his guy crush, Victor Crumb? What do we think? Like, because Harry doesn't care. Harry actively is like, Ron, I don't care that she's come with Crumb. And Ron just has an absolute meltdown over it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it may partly be due to the fact that he's jealous and wants, and you know, like, because he's been wanting to, you know, get close to Crumb, and now Hermione's like on a date with him. But mm-hmm. you know, I feel like whether or not he has feelings for her, like, you know, I don't think that he quite realizes that. I mean, maybe that's the point, that he doesn't realize that there maybe is some attraction like to Hermione. But I think that at this stage, like, he felt very confident in, like, you know, when she entered Hogwarts, she was like the annoying one, and then they became friends with her because of like their adventures, I guess. But like, you know, he at that point like never would have considered her as somebody to have a crush on, because he's probably been, you know, like fed kind of the wizarding equivalent of like photo touch, like magazines of like, you know, like, I don't know, we have like Witch Weekly's most dazzling smile for Lockhart. Like, there must be something, you know, there must be like, you know, like wizard witches magazines with like, you know, hot witches. Oh wait, sorry, okay, this is really random, but I had a theory for how people watch Quidditch matches, or ooh, like keep abreast of Quidditch matches when they are not able to go to the match, and it is radio, because we do see radio coming up at the
that's a really good point,
Burrow, I think, or if not the Burrow, yes, at the World Cup, there's like, mm-hmm, you know, radio happening. So it, you know, it'd be like the old timey like baseball.
I like that theory. I think that makes the most sense of how people are able to keep up with games and stuff like that, for sure. One of the things I did want to go back to though, in regards to Ron, is that I think you make a really good point that, you know, it could be that Ron is upset that Hermione didn't go with him, because you know, Harry's starting to get his first like crush in this book. Like, it would make sense for Ron to like start to have those kinds of feelings for people as well. But I also wonder though, because a big thing in the beginning of this book with the conflict between Harry and Ron was that Ron's always sort of been in Harry's shadow and in the shadow of his brothers. And so he's kind of always like second best. And now, is this also a situation where like Ron is also second best, because Hermione kind of nailed like the best date at mm-hmm. Hogwarts?
I mean, like maybe, but if so, I mean, do you mean that in that like he's again, that he's like jealous that she's with Crumb, or like that he's jealous like that, you know, somebody got to her first and didn't like,
I almost, you know, wonder,
she wasn't on reserve for him, like, you
know. Right, yeah, I feel like it's that, like maybe it's that, and also the fact that like Ron did have so much trouble getting a date, and like Hermione seemed to have like a very easy time, because someone like, you know, had been like, I'm assuming Victor Crumb like spotted her at some point and was like, this girl's beautiful and she's in the library, and you know, we're probably on the same level as far as smarts go, you know,
and she's so, 14, I'm 18.
Yes, you it know happened. And so it did have to be said. Yes, But you know, and so maybe it's sort of that situation where it was just like, everyone is like, oh, if you were to like, you know, list out the students that would probably get dates first, I would assume a lot of Hogwarts students would not assume Hermione would be one of the first people to get asked. And Ron has like a really hard time. And then, yeah, his plan B goes out the window because someone else took initiative where he couldn't.
Yeah. Like, I feel like in that sense, I mean, I think you're right that like people at Hogwarts, if they had to like, you know, guess who would be getting a date, like they wouldn't have guessed Hermione. And like, you know, that sort of reinforces the idea that like there's a standard of beauty that like, you know, kids like see and interpret as like, this is the only beauty. And like, and then like eventually you have to unlearn that and realize that the world is more complicated than that. And like, you know, there's beauty in a wide array of things, but like before you unlearn that, you're learning by like seeing everything around you. And when you see everything around you as like, you know, like bushy hair is not beautiful, but she sleeks down her hair with, you know, the sleek easy potion, and now she is beautiful. Like her buck teeth were not beautiful, but now that she's like, you know, had them magically altered, like now they are beautiful. So I mean, like she's changed like some pieces of her appearance, but like, you know, on the whole, it's, you know, she is still herself, but he's just suddenly realized, oh wait, like, you know, there's more to like to a person and to attraction than, you know, just the hottest person. I mean, look at who he did ask. Like, and you know, he says he doesn't know what came over him, but like maybe on some level, you know, that's saying like who he kind of sees himself with in some circumstances. You know, he was like, I want, you know, Fleur Delacour because she's like the hottest one. Like I desire that, like, you know, for a status symbol. You know, again, probably unconsciously, but like, you know, and Hermione doesn't represent a status symbol necessarily, but in that particular way, I guess.
Is there something to be said for the fact that Hermione in like for the ball ends up sort of embodying those more typical standards of beauty than she normally might?
Like for me, and sort of genuinely how I see it is that it's, you know, it's JK falling short. It's you know, it's her desire to have the character like, and I think this has been said before, but like, you know, that she like in writing the books like felt herself identifying with Hermione, like that's her sort of, that's who she sees herself as. And that, you know, like she got bullied by the
Pansy Parkinsons
of the world, and so she wanted like Hermione to have, you know, to get the guy and like, you know, have the good things happen to her. Yeah. But like, you know, like she's still part of a world and informed by a world that, you know, that has told us for a really long time that the only way to do that is by transforming. And like, think of how many movies are coming out in the 90s and early 2000s that were like, I mean, and probably definitely still, but like, you know, maybe in more like undertones, but like not too long ago, movies were very clearly demonstrating that like the way, you know, you got the hot jock to get to, you know, to go to prom with you is by completely transforming. Yes. You know,
like, well, Princess Diaries is all about that. And
yes, definitely. Yeah. Princess Diaries. Yeah, and there's like a few others that I'm like I have in mind, but I just
is Miss Congeniality about that too?
Yeah pretty much. Yeah, no, excellent. And yeah, like there are just a lot of them. So I think that it's a story that, you know, our sort of the inner part of us that wanted the perfect prom, like that wanted the, you know, to have that like fairy tale story and like that you can look back on. Like, I think, you know, she really wanted Hermione to have that. And I like, and Hermione deserves it. Like,
yes.
But I do think that like the way she went about it, like Hermione deserved to be seen as beautiful with her bushy hair and yeah, her, you know, like her buck teeth. But like, you know, maybe she just needed somebody to help her define her curls. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like she just needed some better products, like not necessarily the Sleek Easy, but just, right, you know.
But just something, yeah.
Or not, like, or whatever, like, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the idea of like Hermione sort of figuring it out and, you know, deserving this moment, you know, because I feel like she gets pushed aside a lot, even though she's, you know, the smartest witch in like all of Hogwarts, you know, and it sort of felt like before it was like you could be pretty or you could be smart. Like you couldn't be both. And now I think we have two examples of smart, beautiful witches. Like Fleur Delacour, obviously, like we can't, you know, say that she's not because she got chosen as a Trial Wizard Champion. Exactly. So she has to be a good witch. And like, you know, and Hermione, like, and even if she doesn't, you know, stick with, you know, her Yule Ball look, like going forward, it's like, you know, I think everyone was like, oh shit, like she is very pretty, you know?
She has appeared on the scene. Yes. Okay, I have a little anecdote.
Yes.
In eighth grade, we went on a school trip down to like from, you know, upstate New York to like Colonial Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. And that was like the educational portion of it. But then they also took us to a theme park and on a little like dinner cruise type thing. And the dinner cruise, you're supposed to like dress up and everything. And I wore like a tight dress. And like, I guess like I've actually lost a lot of muscle mass, but when I was like in at that stage in my life, I was like in heavily involved with sports and like very like kind of sculpted, my butt looked great. And so this was like the entrance onto the scene of my butt where people were like, whoa, nice butt, like all the time. And in fact, I had like multiple guys come up to me on the cruise to be like, I never noticed this part of you. Like, I got a boyfriend out of the whole event like a few weeks later. Like, you know, like my butt was the star of that dinner cruise. And like, it was all because people just like never noticed before until I like put on the tight,
right,
dress. I was like, yes, I love this attention.
Oh my God.
And then like, should we talk about like what they hear when they go outside, or
yes, I don't know, I go, yes, there, absolutely. Yeah, we hear an exchange. The first exchange we hear is between Karkaroff and Snape, and you know, we have no idea what they're talking about, but like, what's getting clearer? We've never seen them interact before. I think Karkaroff says like, we can't just like keep ignoring this. Karkaroff suggests, or Snape at least suggests to Karkaroff, that he should leave Hogwarts. What do we think about that?
Saying like something's getting clearer. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's like, and yes, I think exactly what you said, like that we can't keep ignoring it, but like, you know, it, I feel like the wording is just like, you know, what, like what's getting clearer, like that's, you know, that's very, yeah, honest. And and then for Snape to tell him to flee, like he's the head of a school that is competing in this tournament, like,
right,
how's he gonna just flee? Like
it's worded in such a like a, in such a way where, you know, we can't tell if the thing that's getting clearer is like an object or like a message, like is it something more abstract than that? And you know, and what we know about Karkaroff is that he used to be a Death Eater, and he and Snape are like on first name terms. And like, we know Snape is not very nice, which, I mean, we don't really get a lot about Snape outside of Harry's perspective. So obviously everything we're going to learn about him is negative. But it's interesting that like, they already are sort of suspecting Karkaroff of being involved in why Harry's name came out of the goblet. And now he's talking to somebody who, like, Harry says, like, if Rita Skeeter wanted to write a terrible article about me, she probably should just go to Snape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, they are definitely an odd pairing, you know, and I think, I may be misremembering, but, like, I think that there is, oh, no, wait, like, there was some sign of recognition from Snape towards Karkaroff, like, that Harry may have noticed at the beginning. I'm, like, I may be misremembering that, but I feel like it's, like, they're an odd pairing for sure, but, like, I think this is, like, maybe the second hint of it that we've gotten, like, that they know each other from some time, but I also just loved in this moment just seeing them very much as, like, you know, teacher chaperones at a dance, like,
yes,
you know, because moments after they have this conversation, Snape, you know, like, sees some kids just snogging in a bush, and it, like, yells at them for you know, for snogging, and then yells at, like, Harry and Ron. And I wonder if the two kids who were, like, snogging in the bush, like, also heard the combo.
That's a really good question.
Did they hear what Snape and Karkaroff were saying, and they were just like, don't worry about it? Like,
yeah.
Like, that's weird.
Yeah. It definitely seems weird, but I guess also, like, we can't, you know, in this book, we really are introduced to a lot more, like, the wizarding world gets bigger, you know, it's not just, like, the UK wizarding world in this book, you know, we get to start to see wizards from all over the place. And so it kind of makes sense that, like, you know, a teacher at one school would probably know the headmaster of another one, like, depending on how those communities work. Like, I know they keep, like, their education separate, but, like, there's got to be, like, some way. Yeah, maybe they're wizarding, like, teacher conventions. Yeah, there's got to be, like, a way where, like, these two would have crossed paths with each other, like, at some point, to, like, have that familiarity. Like, because Dumbledore doesn't meet Karkaroff for the first time, you know, in this book. Like, they already know each other, so there's got to be some correspondence within the wizarding world between schools like that.
Yeah, definitely. And as Percy very annoyingly underlines, this is all about building international magical cooperation, making friendships. So we're trying to make sure that we're we have allies abroad.
But at the same time, like, I noticed that, like, the Durmstrang students seem to be much more open to being at Hogwarts than the Beauxbatons students seem to be.
Yeah. I did want to say that Fleur's comment about her robes not fitting her does make total sense. Like, you know, they, like, I feel like Harry, Ron, and Hermione, like, scoff at her, you know, but, like, you know, if you were eating heavier foods than you're used to, and then, you know, you gain weight and you don't fit into your robes, like, that would be a pain. Like,
yeah,
you know, but, you know, then again, I wonder if you can, like, magically alter them. Although, like, you know, you have, like, robe shops. So it's like, you know, like, do you have to go there for alterations, or, like, is there a way to just magically do that? That's just, I mean, this isn't that important, but,
like, I mean, I would assume that, like, if you, I think it would be the same way as, like, for example, like, I just got a dress hemmed, and, like, I don't know how to hem my own dresses, so I went to someone who could do that for me. While, like, someone who already knows how to hem dresses, like, themselves, could probably just do it themselves. So I'm sure there's magic. Like, if Fleur knew that type of magic, she could probably do it herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, like, you know, in that sense, you maybe just want to make it, like, slightly larger. Like,
right.
You know, like,
just expand it a little bit.
Just a slight bit. But Yeah, but like in terms of the Beauxbatons students just like not really feeling at home there. I feel like we're getting some definite like kind of British stereotypes of French people and
Yeah, I
like
was gonna ask like if this seemed like it was written like on like purposely this way, or like why we think it was written this way specifically.
Oh, definitely. I think purposeful to take a day at the French for being snooty. Maybe their robes, like, I mean, besides her robe just being like maybe too small because of the food that she's eating, but like that she's not used to. But like also we have a comment when they first arrive that their clothes are kind of inadequate for the cold weather, and like, you know, like I would hope that they had other things besides what they just wore to arrive there. But like, you know, I would be complaining too if every day I was like freezing cold. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But I also wonder like why they weren't warned what to pack, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I agree. I very much agree with that. Like, but I feel like if they were going to be warned, like, you know, and I like to hope that they brought other clothes, but like, why didn't they wear them when they arrived, or like, you know, carry their coats on their laps and then put them on when they exit the carriage or something? You right. know you're going north in October. But yeah. Like the guys that come over and sweep Padma and Parvati off their feet,
they seem to be having a great time. So
yes, you know, that's true.
I think they're kind of focusing on a sort of like misogynist kind of like French women are particularly snooty.
I was sort of noticing that like earlier in this book where like Hermione like immediately doesn't like the girls from Beauxbatons, and I was like, mm-hmm. why?
Yeah And you know, and maybe because she feels threatened, like in the same way that like, you know, like she wouldn't be necessarily everyone's first choice to like to be, you know, the first person they would think to like be have a date. You know, she probably saw them and was like, you know, she probably knows how people see her, and like, you know, she doesn't care on the whole, but then, you know, there's like a small part of her that's like, but it sucks to not have people like, you know, look at me and say like she's the pretty one, also, or like brains and beauty or like whatever. And now she's like a whole slew of like other like young women come along who are all, you know, in her perspective, like, you know, beautiful and French, which, you know, it's snooty, but it's like sophistication and at the same time, and like
right. I know. And going along with what you were saying before about how, you know, this ball like definitely encourages heterosexual relationships, we never really get an answer as to whether Fleur has the effect that she has on other women.
Yeah, not at all.
Like Hermione always just rolls her eyes like when, you know, the guys are affected by like the villa, and she's like, oh, like men. And but they're like, yeah. We never see like, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I remember you brought that up back in the Quidditch Cup, like,
yeah,
World Cup episode, like, but you're absolutely right. And then there's Madame Maxime, who,
yes,
like, just to like kind of tie it in, like, she's very like when it all comes out that you know Hagrid is half giant, he thinks she is too, you know, and she's like utterly kind of offended by that. And I think, you know, obviously we learn from Ron moments later that it's because of the stigma against giants in the wizarding world, that they're seen as like all like, you know, bloody vicious monsters. But I also think that there's undertones of, I mean, again, kind of like JK's bigotry or like limitations, where, you know, there's a sense of like the fact that she's a bigger woman, like, you know, there's an insinuation that in some way detracts from her femininity or like her, mm-hmm. her womanhood or something like that, you know, which I think like from Harry's perspective, you know, he calls her a handsome woman at the beginning, which I don't know if that's a sort of, again, a call about like, you know, like not femininity, or if we just are supposed to take it as like, you know, he thinks that she's, you know, becoming if like very large, but like she's certainly like in the way that she comports herself, it's very sort of like proper and, you know, like feminine and you know, like she's trying to like perform that role. And, you know, I guess we see that it's like, it may partly be, or in completion, I don't know, be like about her fear of being outed as a half giant.
Maybe. Yeah. And when we learn this, you know, there have been moments before in this book where, you know, some information has come out and Harry's been like, so, you know, because Harry didn't like grow up with like, you know, the stigma that is within the wizarding world. And, you know, we see the same thing with him and like blood purity. He's like, why would I care about that? Like, that makes no sense. Right. And it's sort of like, you know, this is just like another thing that like matters in the wizarding world when it like shouldn't, and like they'll probably end up like generalizing, you know, like the reason Hagrid kept it a secret was because they would like generalize Hagrid with like the qualities of giants that he like very clearly doesn't have. Like Hagrid's been at Hogwarts for what, 60 years, and there's never been a problem, like ever. You know, and then it's you know, it's the same thing with Lupin in the last book, where it's like he's a great teacher. He has never like had a reason to not be around children to teach. And as soon as like people are like, oh, you're a werewolf, please get away from my child, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. A completely treatable condition that, you know, can only be passed on like by fighting a wizard. Yeah. Like, how did Hagrid's father get with a giantess?
That's the real question here. I have no idea. I would love to have like more material of just like that entire relationship, because I have how does that even start, I guess?
Well, like, because the way that Ron describes them is like trolls, and the troll that we've encountered previously is like, you know, not exactly like, it is more animal than it is human, kind of like, but it seems like if you know, indeed multiple, you know, human giant relationships have happened, then there must be like more to it than, well, certainly than wizards give them credit for, but also than, you know, we're kind of even led to believe in, you know, in our interaction with the only other creature that gets compared to the giants.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems like, yeah, like there has to be something more there if like that kind of relationship is even possible. And like, as you were speaking, I immediately thought of like Beauty and the Beast and sort of how like when she's trying to convince everybody that he's like nice, and everyone's like, no, absolutely not, we're gonna go murder him because we don't think he's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people are dumb. We do. Yeah. Like,
and it also like, I mean, it speaks to Hagrid too, with like the fact that like he is such a caring individual. Like, he like can look after all these creatures. He can teach, he can like work at Hogwarts. Like it's not like.
And Maxine, you know, as well, like she's the headmistress of like an extremely prestigious school. Like, and you know, like she didn't just get there like because somebody was like, oh, we gotta
put her in to like look good, to have, because we like to show that we have women on the, you know, the thing. Like that's not a factor. Like, you know, we are absolutely led to believe, like, you know, like she's, you know, an incredibly powerful and, you know, powerful witch, but also, you know, like presumably a good school administrator, like,
right. Well, she commands a lot of respect from her students. Yeah. Like they, you know, as soon as she walks in the Great Hall, they stand up. They don't sit down until after she sits down. You know, yeah. There's like a lot of etiquette around it that I'm sure wouldn't be the case if they didn't respect her the way that they do.
Yeah. And like, do parents of Beauxbatons, I mean, we don't know this, but like, do parents of Beauxbatons like have concerns about her? Do they write and say, you know, we're concerned you're a half giant, like, you know,
right? And it's interesting that, like, I don't know, like that it also wasn't obvious that Hagrid was a half giant, or that either of them are, like, because I feel like Harry and Ron really never make the connection until Hagrid says it, and then they're like, oh
yeah,
you know,
right? And do other people make the connection, like, because as you said, he's been there for so long and like interacted with so many different students, who probably many of them then became the parents of the students, mm-hmm. who are there now. Like, it's seemingly like, okay, we have, you know, Malfoy, and, you know, Malfoy calling him like an oaf, and Malfoy Senior, like, you know, like also making digs at his like intelligence and his like, you know, poverty, I guess, like, even though I don't know if we'd call, like, Hagrid is living like his best life, like like he wouldn't want anything else, like, yeah. His life is rich, but yeah, they're not necessarily like making these accusations of like, you know, we think he must be there, like rumors kind of flying around under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
But like in the very beginning of the book, in the Muggle world with Frank Bryce, the you know, Muggle caretaker of the old Riddle House, like, you know, we see a great example of, you know, people who for generations have like suspicions about this guy that are just being like, you know, cast around all the time. And like, Hagrid was expelled from Hogwarts under very mysterious circumstances. He is an extremely like conspicuous person, like, so like, you know, were there questions at that point? And like, you know, did, like, obviously we're pro Hagrid is a great person, but like, you know, if there are such concerns about the dangers of, like, you know, half giants or a person having giant blood, like, you know,
yeah, I mean, that could have had a hand in it too.
Wait, did I have more things? Oh, I really feel like Dumbledore is a father figure to Hagrid, I just want to say, because he's, you know,
like, I like that.
He has two dads. He has his biological father, and he has Dumbledore, who essentially raised him from age like 13 onward.
Yeah. It's just like, we, you know, we learn more about Dumbledore and how, like, you know, caring he really seems to be for other creatures, but also other students, you know?
Yeah, I like that, because to some extent we're like, you know, we only get sort of like Harry and Dumbledore's relationship a lot. And like, you know, Harry certainly has a lot of like respect and trust in Dumbledore, like not necessarily as a caretaker for him, but certainly as like, you know, as a like a trusted adult, like, you know, somebody who like would not, you know, give him that much like crap for doing things, like, he, you know, especially because, like, you know, when he gets you know, his name comes out of the Goblet of Fire, and Dumbledore calmly asks him whether he did it, and he says he didn't, yes. And Dumbledore says he believes him. You know, this is like somebody who respects children, and they're like that they're whole people. What are my next thing thoughts? Oh, actually, again, like kind of on that note as well, I like going back to chapter 21, I did want to note that it's interesting how quickly and readily Harry trusts Sirius, because he's really only met this guy for like 2 hours. but he's more forthcoming with information to Sirius than he is with his best friends in some ways. You know, he writes to Sirius before writing to his best friends about like his scar hurting in the summer, and like, you know, he unloads on Sirius you know, information about like his fears before the first task, when he's like not really willing to admit his fears like openly to, like he kind of does to Hermione, but like obviously can't to Ron in that moment, like but even then, like he sometimes doesn't admit his fears like to Ron anyway, because of like some, I don't know, bullshit masculinity thing, or like or just, you know, he's never had anyone to talk to about this, so he, you know, he doesn't know how to share those emotions, but like, but then he, you know, so like he can get over that for Sirius. Like Sirius to him like immediately becomes someone he confides in like enormously. And then, you know, and then after the first task, he's like, you know, sharing like the blow by blow of like of, you know, what of what happened with the dragon. Like he's so proud, and like pride is also kind of a very vulnerable thing to share, even though like, you know, you know, you'd hope that somebody would be like joyous at your joy, even when they, even if they can't be like good at like comforting you in your like sorrow or like downtimes. But like, but even so, like if you do share something that you're proud of and somebody like shoots it down, like, you know, that sucks. So like, I think both his pride and his fears are very like vulnerable things. And, but he's willing to share all of that with Sirius.
Yeah, and I think it's probably because I think that shows like how desperate Harry's been to have a parental figure, you know, in his life, and also with Sirius's proximity to Harry's father. I think, you know, Harry attaches to him like immediately, and he wants someone to, I can't remember if it was the beginning of this book, but we definitely gone over it before, where, you know, Harry just wanted like a parent to share whatever was happening with.
It totally was this book where he's like, I need someone, a trusted adult who isn't gonna judge me, someone like a parent, but like I don't have those. Oh yeah, serious.
Right, like, and also someone who like I can write to, who like it won't be a bother that I'm reaching out about whatever.
Honestly, I would have gone with Lupin. Like Lupin, he has way more of an established relationship with.
You know, that is so true, and I haven't thought about that before. And like the fact that like Harry hasn't even like spoken or like been in contact with Lupin since the end of last year is like terrible.
Yeah,
like Harry probably should have sent a letter to Lupin being like, I have to face dragons, help me.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, no, it honestly makes no sense that he would trust Sirius over Lupin. like equally, I guess I could understand after some amount of time, but like, you know, or more interactions, like certainly up front.
Yeah.
You know. You'd be like, oh, who's the person who helped me learn how to face a difficult thing last year? Oh yeah, my teacher.
The best defense against the dark arts teacher I have ever had.
Alas, you get serious. other kind of like notable things from the chapter is notable kind of silly things. Just I love that the fumes from the trough of whiskey that's being fed to the horses that pull the Beauxbatons carriage is causing fumes that are making the Care of Magical Creatures class tipsy. Like they're just in class and we just walking over and they're like, this is great. And then we also learn that Rita Skeeter is banned from the grounds, as she should be.
As she should be.
Allowed on the grounds.
Oh my goodness. I know. And I just worry about her all the time because her first article was like crazy. And now she's like trying to talk to like Hagrid and like, they're like, oh my God, she's going to twist everything that he says. And that also, she's looking for a new angle because she doesn't like her. The first angle was like, oh, Harry's this tragic hero. We should all like root for him. Yeah. And now she wants like another angle, you know, to sort of like, I don't know, cause trouble.
Yeah, just spice it up. Like,
yeah.
Get her name on the front page of the Daily Prophet. Like, it's all about the galleons.
Yeah.
Also, Moody's eye can see through clothes, and that's really creepy. He sees through Harry's hands to his socks, or robes to his socks. And even Parvati, like, says she's uncomfortable with that. So, like, it's weird, because, like, Moody's, like, supposed to be this, like, you know, very, like, trusted, like, you know, good old friend of Dumbledore's. You know, he's like, he's kind of scary and intimidating, but like you're supposed to be like, oh, but he's a good guy. But like if he's creeping on all the female students and they're like definitely uncomfortable with it, not a good guy. Like
I know, I wonder like if he can control.
You need to think so.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think so. I would also feel like if you were just like looking at everybody and like only seeing them like half naked all the time would get like really annoying.
Yeah, like, right. Because like, what's the limit? Like, would you see their bones? Are you seeing like x-rays? Like,
right. And then like, or then like, what else are you missing? Right. Like, if you can't, like, maybe like their clothing is important or something like that. So he has to be able to like see that and then also like see through it. Yeah. But like, what would motivate him to be like, I'm going to look and see what kind of socks Harry's wearing.
Yeah. Weird.
He's an interesting individual that we've met in this book.
You want to support that he's like teaching them lessons and like the kids like seem to be like learning a lot under him, like, but his methods are highly questionable. I just feel like none of these people honestly should be allowed to supervise children, like, except for McGonagall.
McGonagall's like the only one.
But just like the sheer fact that they're like making them compete at like show ponies, like, you know, in super dangerous conditions, like,
right, in the name of tradition.
But they're like reviving the tradition, like it was already dead. But yeah, let's bring that. I guess the last things that like happen in the 23rd chapter is Cedric giving Harry the hint to take his egg into the bath, which, what? Because screaming, but bathing? So,
but bathing.
Those
usually don't go well together.
And then he specifically mentions the prefect bathroom, but Harry's like, I don't want to take his advice because he's like you know, listen, he went to prom with the date I wanted to go with.
At least, like, now Harry has, like, an actual reason to sort of dislike Cedric. Like, earlier in this book, everyone was hating on Cedric, and I was like, he's been nothing but nice to you. Like,
yeah, but I don't think Harry hated him from the beginning. And in fact,
no, Harry, but other people did.
Extremely handsome. But
he took Harry's crush to prom. Now there's an issue.
Yeah.
For Cedric. Cedric's just out here, like, living his life. Like, he's literally, like, not meaning to, like, do any harm. He's just out here doing his thing, and everyone's like, fuck off.
Yeah. And then, of course, then Hermione is, and Ron are, like, screaming at each other, and she calls him out for being jealous, and he's just like, she missed the point.
I do like, though, at the end, though, that Harry, like, agrees with Hermione.
Yeah, but he's like, but I'm definitely not going to say anything.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not, Hermione made the point, I don't need to say anything, but, like, Hermione's definitely right in this situation.
Yeah, that was, like, fair enough, I guess. I have one additional, like, school dance type story. Well, I actually have way more than one, but, like, but I could, I have one that's, like, pretty funny that's definitely worth sharing.
Yes.
So it was not a school dance. I went across, like, flew with my mom and my sister across country to Nevada for the bat mitzvah of my mom's freshman roommate's daughter. So, like, a person I didn't know that well, but we're, like, around the same age. So, you know, we went, and, you know, that's very, like, she had invited tons of friends from school. That's, you know, sometimes common depending on the person, the practice, the, like, you know, community you live in, but, like, she certainly had a lot of friends. So I was, like, enjoying myself and, you know, dancing with like the people who were there that I didn't know, like these random other kids. And, like, I ended up slow dancing with this one guy, like, a couple of times. And then years later, we went on a, like, vacation with the same, like, my mom's freshman roommate and her daughters, and myself and my sister. And we found out that the girl whose bat mitzvah it was, her school, for whatever reason, put photos of that event in the school yearbook and called it, like, the winter dance, like, the winter formal. They, like, you know, it's titled that, and that there's a picture of me slow dancing with this random guy in her school yearbook, at an event that was not the school dance.
Oh, I mean, my God.
Random, but I just love to think that I'm, like, in somebody's random school yearbook.
I love that. It's too bad Hogwarts doesn't have a yearbook,
or that we don't get to hear about, like, more kind of clubs and other activities other than Quidditch.
Other than,
like,
Quidditch,
there must be something else going on.
Yeah.
Not everyone's in Quidditch. Plus, okay, this is something that has always bothered me. They get apparently one flying lesson, and if, like,
Harry, you are automatically great at it, you make it onto the Quidditch team, apparently. And if you're not, you just never fly again.
Yeah, I feel like flying is definitely one of those things that, like, you probably need it to be at least a year long. And, like, I would assume, like, we had to sit through, like, health class for 4 years. Like, why does Quidditch only get, like, 1 year's worth of lessons?
Yeah, and even, like, gym class, which this could, in theory, be considered comparable to, like, you know, they make you do activities, and it's often, like, the same activities year after year. But, like, they just, you know, they have units, like, for a month we're doing, like, softball, and then they're like, now we're swimming, and now we're, you know, like, badminton or whatever. So that's always bothered me, that they don't, like, even mention continuing flying classes.
Yeah. Oh, Hogwarts. I think those are all of my notes. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I just have another prom story, but I definitely don't have to tell it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. I was so glad to talk to you, and I was so glad that you were super excited to be on, and thank you for contributing to this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you again. And like, I've been super enjoying the podcast, and I think you always have great guests, and you have great thoughts, and, you know, questions for all of us. So, and I love kind of like putting myself in that mindset that like I'm reading it again for the first time, you know, sort of imagining like, you know, what it's, you know, what are sort of your, I mean, fake first impressions of us, like,
Well, thank you again.
Absolutely.
First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.